Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. How are you? 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. We got very excited today when we heard that Alexa is looking for an Irish voice. So when you say, what's the weather going to be like, Alexa? It'll be delivered in an Irish voice. That's going to be a grand soft day. And we thought, who would it be? Who could do it? Who would have the quintessential Irish voice? And we went through all that. We went, like, would it be Liam Neeson? Like, there's a voice. There's a voice.
I get to do something I love doing, still love doing. I've made 72 movies now. I can't believe it. I love it. Absolutely love it.
It'd be great crack if he was the voice of Alexa, wouldn't it? You know, you'd be asked him to, you know, how do you make pancakes? One egg, 100 grams of flour. That'd be good crack. Or maybe someone younger.
We always used to talk about the show we did. Like, it was our first show on our first ever tour with 1D. Yeah. And we basically, everything we did in rehearsals, we didn't do on that night. It couldn't have gone any worse if we...
Niall Horan, he'd be a good choice. You know, you go, what should we have for dinner, Alexa? Curry chips. That's what he'd say, curry chips. I know what you're saying. It has to be a female voice. Our friend Brenda Fricker would be brilliant as the voice of Alexa.
When we were doing all the publicity, and you have to do a lot of publicity before, and we were all told to push Daniel because he was the one of you in with a chance, it never crossed my mind that my name would come out. You know, there was Angelica Houston, there was Julia Roberts. Yeah. I mean, come on, talk about an outsider.
And then you're a great crack with that because you go, Alexa, who is the only Irish actor to win an Oscar? And then I go, me. Be the answer. Maybe someone high energy, that's what you're looking for, yeah.
It's crazy, and like the first reveal of the dress, you're like, oh my God, it's her dress, and you're like, oh my God, and then she's like in her car, and she's like doing the waving, that's why I was doing the waving. And like, we want her to do peace signs, and like, yo, what's up, queen?
Great, I love them, but my heart rate has increased already, and you probably don't want that in your kitchen, you know. We had her on a few weeks ago, and Neil said that this lady would be the brilliant voice for Alexa.
I love Dublin, you know what I mean? I love Ireland. I'm a homebird. I get homesick after 2 weeks. I'm itching to get back home, you know? I'm too nosy. I want to know what's going on at home, you know what I mean?
And you get up in the morning, you go, all right, Alexa. And then the voice of Kerry Harrington go, all right. Or could it be Saoirse? Could they afford her?
When you change your accent, you're speaking in a different way. So if I was doing like a Southern English accent or a Californian accent, the way I would speak would just completely change.
Saoirse Ronan or Gabriel Byrne.
Failure is something that you have to contend with because it forces you to better yourself in a way. I've seen people in Hollywood who've had success and they cling on to it, you know, like a drowning man onto a rock, and they'll do...
See, if it was Gabriel, he wouldn't be able to give you a straight answer, you know, because you go, what should I do tomorrow? Well, what do you want to do tomorrow? What's the meaning of life? So that it'd always be deep and philosophical, if that's the type of thing you wanted. But if you want to laugh...
My ex used to go drinking with the lads. They don't talk. He'd come home and I'd say, how are the lads? And he'd be like, what? I was like, oh, I don't know. I'm like, how do you not know? What do you talk about? He's like, nothing. And I'm like, really? You've been gone for 2 days.
Definitely popular with the ladies, John McNally. And universally popular, probably Graham Norton. Would he be a good voice for Alexa?
So smug git off telly goes, yes, you can have the memoir. If you will also agree to publish this novel that I haven't written yet, don't know what it's about, you haven't seen, and we don't know anything. And they went, yes.
Lovely timbre. But of course, there's more to Ireland than just Dublin and the cities. Like, you're talking about rural Ireland. The majority of people live in rural Ireland. You want a voice that suits that. Alexa, do you think we should have the dinner at 8 o'clock in the morning so we have a good run of the day?
No, we have a lot on the agenda, lads, so we'll cut the chase and get straight down to the business. We had a robbery, lads, only last week down the village. It was last Friday night. They came in at the house approximately 3 a.m. They proceeded to clean out the kitchen, the sitting room, and leave via the front door. Now, can you tell me what's wrong with that? The window was freaking wide open, lads. Just you can't do that. You can't go to bed and leave a window open or door. We're blue in the face and tell you, lads, when you lock up before you go to bed.
That's right.
You're only wasting our time and your time.
Pat Short, what do you think? Well, as it turns out, we didn't read the whole article and they've chosen somebody already. In fact, they haven't chosen anybody. It's an AI-generated voice. So it's there. if you want to download it. So whatever Amazon type advice or device you have and you talk to Alexa, there is now an Irish English voice option. So the original one is, say, you know, if I said, you know, what can you do, Alexa?
I can play music, answer questions, get the news and weather, create to-do lists and much more.
So that's what you would have heard. As in from today, what's the crack, Alexa?
Alexa, what's the crack?
Ah, a question.
The crack is mighty.
I don't know who, what I'm hearing there.
Alexa, what's the crack?
The crack is mighty.
Oh, so it's the second one there. The crack is 90. That's the voice. Yeah. I don't know if you were watching Future Island last night with Anna Daly, but they had this clip of Morgan Freeman, but it wasn't really Morgan Freeman. It was one of those deep fake things. So all the visuals were generated by a computer and his voice was generated by a computer. But oh, that's the future, lads. People like Morgan Freeman and you know, thing of the past, they'll be able to generate the whole thing. We mentioned this a few weeks ago when the man who does Darth Vader's voice was retiring. Alexa, best Irish movie, please.
Alexa, what's the best Irish film ever?
Well, it's not Wild Mountain Time.
Ah, smart. It's not Wild Mountain Time. So there, if you use one of those. And people are still suspicious. I don't know why we don't have one of those devices in the house. I don't know if it's because we're suspicious that they'd be listening to us and monitoring our behaviour and our conversations. But government departments think that that might be a possibility because there's an IT policy guide document from the Oireachtas, which was released to all staff. And it advises them not to discuss work information around smart speakers at home, in case Alexa or Siri or whoever you're having yourself is listening. So there. That was a bit of crack. Yeah, tonight in Vicar Street, the RTÉ Radio 1 5th Annual Folk Awards, John Creedon presenting, and all the winners will be announced. And we have been introducing you to the best, or even the nominees for Best Original Folk Track on the show since this day last week. We've played Susan O'Neill's Now You See It, Cormac Begley's To War, Jesse Buckley and Bernard Butler, Footnotes on the Map. Yesterday we played Anamika's song Twin. And there's two more on the list, so we'll get to those. Siva is one of the other nominations, and their song is Spare Rua. And here's a clip. I like that. Siva, S-I-F-O-M-H-A, and Spare Rua. And the final nomination in the Best Original Folk Track for tonight's Folk Awards is Padraig Jack. And his song is Danav Ganav. Making Sand is Padraig Jack. There you go, that's Padraig Jack and Danav Ganav, and good luck to all the nominees tonight. And that's live on RTÉ Radio 1, and of course there'll be a crowd down at Vicar Street as well. I'm trying to get my head around the World Cup, and I read Cathy Sheridan's piece in the Times yesterday. Qatar World Cup, to watch or not to watch, that is the question. By me deciding not to watch it, it's not going to make any difference, is it really? And you know, as well as the human rights problems with Qatar, then there's the alleged 6,500 migrant workers who died in the construction of the magnificent stadiums that the matches will be played in, and there's that ongoing thing about you have to respect our culture, but our culture doesn't respect, for example, the gay community, probably doesn't respect women as much as it should. So that thing about respect our culture, I don't buy that. So I don't know. I love a tournament. I do love a tournament. And, you know, remember Iceland in the European finals there, and how that story, the drama of it all, the underdog and the chant and the crowds. And even though Ireland aren't in it, there's going to be stories like that, and there's going to be drama, and there's going to be brilliant games, and there's going to be underdogs beating, you know, the powerhouses of world football. That's all going to happen. But will you feel comfortable watching it when you know the backdrop to the whole thing? And why is it in Qatar? And the only obvious answer is, and there have been rumours widely, none of them substantiated, that there was some sort of bribery, jiggery, pokery going on between, you know, the government of Qatar and FIFA. And so I still don't know, because if I decide not to switch on the telly when a match is on, it's not going to affect anybody. It's not going to register a complaint to anybody. It'll be interesting to see if viewing figures for the World Cup this year are any different to previous years when Ireland haven't featured, which is a good few of them. That'll be interesting to see. And I'm wondering, you know, what you're thinking. Like, that article was yesterday, and Mike Morn wrote into the Irish Times today after it, and he says, "Sir, Cathy Sheridan sets out a very stark manner, in a very stark manner, the reasons why Qatar should not be holding the 2022 World Cup. Soccer fans sitting at home watching on TV should not be made feel guilty, as the blame for this morally corrupt decision to award Qatar the hosting of the World Cup rests with FIFA," says Mike. And then Peter Declan O'Halloran from Belturba, County Cavan, he wrote in as well. He says, "The Soccer World Cup looms and very few people, it seems, are actually discussing the football. There's been a lot of talk about equality, tolerance and respect, yet the same moral principles appear to be absent when most commentators mention Qatar. Surely people, cultures and nations are entitled to hold and uphold their own value systems. As the old adage has it, if we only conducted business with people we agreed with, we would hardly do any business at all." That's the view of Peter Declan O'Halloran. So I'm wondering what you're thinking about it. Will you be watching it or not? And if not, why not? Now, let's see what you're saying. 51551. Mrs. Doyle would be great. She would. Go on. Imelda should be the voice. I think they should have come to a radio programme like us. And we would have ran a competition. We did this years ago for the Voice of Garmin or something like that. And it ended up that a listener was the Voice of Garmin for 2 years or 3 years in Ireland. That might have been a good idea. I would like to nominate Dustin as the quintessential Irish come Dublin accent. Go on, you good thing. You'd go, "Alexa, when can I get the roof fixed?" And then Dustin would go on, "Tuesday. I'm not saying which Tuesday." That'd be the answer. I'd love to hear Daniel O'Donnell once he started every sentence with, "Sure you know yourself." I can't do Daniel. I think Eileen Dunn. Ah, yes. Eileen would be great. Why don't we ask Alexa, who it wants its voice to be? That is, that's like when Henry Marsh was telling us that he had the patient and he had his skull open and the brain, and he had the camera pointing at the area of the brain that sees things. And he said to the man, "Look over there. That's the area of the brain that's seeing what you're seeing." That's a bit like that, isn't it? Would you ever stop calling Alexa? I'm trying to listen to you and my device is going mad. So stop. So yeah, that happens every time, but it's a bit of crack. And let's see what else you're saying there. When I say goodnight to Alexa for a laugh, sometimes she replies, "Ihawa." Ah, there you go, Emer. Well, now she'll be saying "Ihawa" in an Irish English accent, whatever that is. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. I will tell you about our quiz in a moment, but first a bit of this. There you go, 80s gold, The Cars, and Just What I Needed on RTÉ Radio 1. Let me tell you about our quiz. We're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and answer 3 questions each on bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And there is a prize, as always. It's a 2-night stay for 2 people in the wonderful Wineport Lodge. The perfect way to give yourself and someone special the gift of relaxation and rejuvenation. You'll stay in a gorgeous lake view room, enjoying stunning views over Loch Ree from your very own private balcony. Delicious leisurely breakfast each morning and dinner on the evening of your choice. Loads of things to do. Crisp winter walks, cycle on the complimentary bikes, or stretch out aching limbs with a yoga class. There's the Cedarwood Spa and the Infinity Pool. And you can learn more or even find out more about Wineport at wineport.ie. Wineport.ie. On this Thursday afternoon, here is your qualifying question, ladies and gentlemen. What popular Australian soap is making a comeback after being axed in July? Right? What popular Australian soap is making a comeback after being axed in July? That's not difficult. 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 or ray@rte.ie. Now, Abigail Disney is a descendant of entertainment royalty. Her great uncle was the legendary Walt Disney. He co-founded Disney with his brother Roy, and Roy is Abigail's grandfather. Can you imagine growing up with full access to the happiest place on earth? The dream of so many kids and so many Disney fans. Well, Disneyland was a home away from home for Abigail, who joins me now from our Cork studio to talk about how sometimes the American dream isn't always as it seems, as outlined in her new documentary due to premiere at the Cork Film Festival tomorrow. The documentary is called The American Dream and Other Fairy Tales. And Abigail, as I say, is in our Cork studio. Good afternoon, Abigail.
Good afternoon.
So this is sort of a homecoming, well, at least a holiday homecoming.
For sure.
Yes. So your family have a long relationship with Ireland and in particular West Cork.
Yes, and I actually predate even that for my family because I came here for the first time in 1982, right as I graduated from college, to live with a family and work as their au pair.
Ah.
And then my parents in the late 80s, early 90s bought a house down here, and I've been back ever since, at least once a year.
Right. Congratulations on the documentary.
Thank you.
It's thought-provoking, and I imagine it's going to upset some people, but we'll get to that in a moment. First, let's establish your genealogy. Okay. Your grandfather, Roy, and your dad was Roy as well, the first Roy and his brother Walt set up Disneyland. Now, how much do you know about the chats that they had before it happened and what led to the starting of the company?
Well, you know, in a family like mine, there's always lore.
Yes.
That
yes.
It's passed down rather readily. So there were a lot of stories that I got from my father and my grandfather about how things happened and so forth. And, you know, it was, if you imagine a world before Disneyland, it was a crazy thing to do. You know, it was crazy to say, I'm going to buy a bunch of land in the middle of the orange orchards down there where nobody goes in Orange County and build a permanent, basically circus fair carnival kind of place. And it will be clean and you will be safe there, which, you know, in those days, you weren't necessarily all that clean at a carnival or a circus or that safe. And they did it. They did it with every last penny they had, and they borrowed even more than that. And then they sold half an interest in it to ABC Network, believe it or not, before they opened it. They were really sure that this would work, and it did.
And you, as a child, hanging out with your grandfather, was there sort of a Disney family entrance to the park?
No Disney family entrance, but my grandfather was he was such a lovely man. He was soft and gentle and sweet and loving, and he would take us with him sometimes when he had work to do or someone to meet with. So we would go in along the side of Main Street USA. Mm. That was sort of where he would park, and there'd be people having their breaks, you know, from their work, as they call it, on stage. They call it off stage and on stage, or backstage, rather, and on stage.
Cast members. And
yes, yeah. Cast members. And so we would, you know, they would love my grandfather. They all called him Roy, and he would know all about their wives and their children and so forth. And so there was always something really interesting that went on before we went into the park. And then we'd step through this door onto Main Street, and it was there you were, right in the middle of everything.
Yeah. And been backstage with the cast members and getting a chance to chat. There wouldn't have been that many characters at that stage, or would there?
Oh, I think they had a person in a Mickey Mouse costume from the very beginning.
Yes, right.
But if you look, you know, I'm sure there's somewhere online where you can find the evolution of that guy. And it was really changed through the years. And so Mickey Mouse in those days was just a small person in a suit.
Mm.
and a big head that he took off when he was taking his coffee break. So I was able to see him without his head from time to time. It was a very jarring experience for a young child.
Yes, it would be. Yes, it would.
And on top of it, you know, the characters don't speak because they, you know, you can't know that they'll have the right voice. And in those days, he was a grown man. I mean, he was a small man, but he was a grown man, and he talked like this. So he would see my grandmother, and he'd say, "Edna, Edna, so glad to see you."
Yeah, I've interviewed numerous Disney characters over the years, and they don't talk, so it was sort of a monologue interrupted by nods. Yeah, always fun though. And then your dad, was it a given that he was going to be part of the business?
I think it was a given from pretty young. He left for college very young. He was only 16 when he left for college. And he was a small, skinny 16-year-old in 1946 when the GI Bill brought like every former soldier back to college. So he got through college and then went back to the company and got to work in editing and being a page in some of the audience-based things. And he did sort of every little odd job. And then he started making his own films, the films that went on TV on Sunday night.
Yeah.
And he was there for 50 years, more than 50 years.
And it was sort of a dream factory, wasn't it, Disney? It still is, I suppose.
It was a dream factory. You know, occasionally he would bring us in to meet the animators or the Imagineers. And, you know, some of my fondest memories of childhood are of those moments when we had the opportunity to, I saw them working on the witch's head in the haunted house, which is a hologram. Right. You know, it's a big, big glass ball with a woman's head inside of it. And I can remember them making that happen.
So you were growing up then, and you know, a child looks around and everything is magical, and everything's fun and all that. And then you hit teenage years and you start to question things.
Yes.
When did you realize that your experience of the world was quite different to everybody else's experience of the world?
It is a slow dawning. You really don't. And I went to a high school where everybody's family was sort of in the business, most people's anyway, and so you know that delayed my dawning. It wasn't until I like went away to college and people started asking me weird questions about whether or not my grandfather or uncle was frozen in the freezer and things like that. You start to realize that people know things about your family, which isn't normal, and that they're kind of fascinated with you, which isn't normal. And that's when it started to dawn on me that this was a weird life I was born into.
That's interesting that they know things about you and they've never met you before. How did you react as a teenager to that or as a young adult?
Well, 18, 19, 20, when I was in college, I, of course, wanted anything but that. And so I kind of sometimes lied and said I wasn't related when people asked me. I dressed horribly.
Purposely horribly.
Yes, right. I did. When I started grad school in New York City, I would get out of the cab 6 blocks early so nobody would see me taking a taxi because I just didn't want people to think I was a spoiled girl.
Yeah, and you came into an awful lot of money when you were 18 and set up for life, really.
And set up for life, yeah. Exactly. Which is a weird position to be in at a time when most people are trying to decide what their life is going to be. And money, of course, figures into that. It's not the only thing that makes your decision for you. But at a time when you're deciding what your livelihood and what your calling is, everything is optional. And that's a strange coming of age.
It is, because for a lot of people, money is important. And their life choices and their career choices are often dictated by earning money. You didn't have to consider that.
Yeah, exactly.
So what were you playing around with in your head then, what you wanted to do with your life?
Well, I didn't have filmmaking in my head because it felt like I would only be compared. Mm. And that just felt like a nightmare to me. So I had no idea, really. Honestly, as part of the reason after college I came here, I just wanted to spend a year earning the roof over my head. I wanted something really, really, really straightforward to do that showed me that I was capable of doing this thing I would never have to do. It was something I had to prove to myself. Mm. And then I went back to graduate school, which is what you do when you have no idea what you're going to do. I did have in my head when I started grad school that I'd love to be an English professor, you know, teaching literature somewhere someday. And so I finished a PhD And that took me a lot of years, about 10 years. And by the time I'd done that, I'd had a couple children and I was going to have a couple more. So by that time, I was mostly home with my kids and doing lots of work as a volunteer.
Just to go back a little bit, at what stage in your life did you realize that money doesn't make you happy? No, because, you know, from the outside, I suppose people looking in.
Oh, yeah.
So the Disney empire and all the Disney families as, you know, happy, 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 smiley. But that wasn't the case.
Oh, you know, it's a really interesting phenomenon. I went to this weight loss program and everybody in the weight loss program had 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 pounds or whatever. And then when they lost those 20 pounds, everything was going to be fine. And people almost universally treat money the same way because it's such a constant nagging worry for most people. It's the first problem. But actually, you always have 100 other problems. But it's easy to pile everything on top of that first obvious thing and make that into the magic thing that will make everything okay. People with money have all the same problems. They have addiction. They have marriage problems. They have personality problems. They argue too much. They lose their temper too much. All of the things that happen to people, regular, ordinary, everyday people, happen to people with money. And there are some things that money actually makes worse. Addiction, if you know, go look at a People magazine or whatever your gossip magazine is there, I don't remember. There's 100 stories in there about the rich person with the drinking problem or the drug problem. And the problem is those people don't have people around them who'll tell them the truth about what's going on with them. And they don't have to do what they do in almost any recovery program, which is to admit that they're helpless.
Yeah. And they'll never be destitute because there's
there's
the cushion of money.
One of the first things you do in recovery is say, I'm no better than anyone else. And that's a hard...
So your dad and your mom were both alcoholics.
Yeah, sadly, I hate to say that here because they loved being here and they wouldn't want people to think ill of them. But I say it honestly because the secrecy is so damaging and the shame around it is so damaging. And I don't think there's shame in it.
No.
I think it's a problem people have that it would be so much easier to confront if it didn't feel so awful to confront it.
Have you tried to understand your mom and dad's addiction? I'm just wondering, because you said already that you didn't want to go into filmmaking because fear of being compared.
Yeah.
So there was your dad, Roy, you know, the son of Roy, nephew of Walt, and he was in the same business. I wonder, was that a struggle for him?
It certainly was, and I know it contributed to his problem for sure. He went to work every day with a whole set of concerns that most people don't have, and it was known around the company that Walt didn't really have much respect for him. And so most of the people who really loved Walt, and it did divide up, unfortunately, into people who really loved Walt and people who really loved my grandfather, tended to not think well of my father. And so imagine what that takes, character-wise, to show up for work every day under those circumstances.
Soul-destroying.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And, you know, he eventually went on his own, and he created his own investment vehicle and did very well and made a few films on his own. And I think that was really good for him. I wish he'd done it younger, so he didn't have to spend so much of his life in that soul-crushing, everyday thing.
So, to the documentary then, we've established who you are, where you're from. The documentary is called The American Dream and Other Fairy Tales. You don't name Disney in the title. Was that on purpose?
Oh, very much on purpose. Although, you know, the castle's right there on the poster, so it's no secret. And I think I wanted it to be about American companies and the full American dream, because this isn't just a Walt Disney problem. This is the problem across the board with American business culture.
So when did you become uncomfortable and questioning of the empire that had given you your life?
I was always uncomfortable. I mean, I came here to work as a nanny because I was uncomfortable. You know, it felt funny to not have to do the thing everybody else was doing. And, you know, it just feels really unfair. And so the unfairness, I'm a third of four children. And then middle children, we tend to be obsessed with what's fair. So I did just always have that as a seed, kind of like in the oyster working its way and covering with other layers of concern. And I got very involved in my late 20s and 30s into the politics of inequality and sort of like how, well, so how does a person like me do the right thing given the way they've been situated on the earth? And so that's when I became kind of more versed in what the issues were, for instance, around homelessness in New York City and things like that, and why it was the way it was. And that's what led me inextricably back to making this film, because, you know, I couldn't pretend that that I didn't have any power to say something.
Yes. So it was Ralph and Trina, a married couple. Both of them worked for Disney.
Yes.
And they couldn't live, really. They weren't earning enough between the two of them to keep their family just at a very low level.
Yeah.
And then they'd contacted you and you decided, I'm going to have to look at this. And that's the germ of the documentary.
Yeah, yeah. So I had made a few documentaries by that point about a lot of different things. And I had worked in the politics of inequality and kind of talking about it. And I'd been an advocate publicly for changing the American tax structure to address inequality. So it was, you know, already kind of engaged in those issues. But there was like this uncrossable line about my family and that company that felt just like an emotional bridge I couldn't cross. But when Ralph reached out to me on Facebook, and by the way, Ralph and Trina are here and they're going to be at the screening tomorrow night. They're staying at my place that my parents bought near Britain. Yeah. And so anyway, they were such lovely human beings, and I watched them and they were so truly trying the best they could, and they were doing everything that the world tells them they should do and yet still struggling. And I could see what had happened and the contrast with what I remembered as a child going backstage there with my grandfather and my father and meeting those people and knowing perfectly well that in those days when I was meeting those people, they weren't acting happy. You know, they had enough money, you know, from their jobs to buy a house, raise their children, send them to decent schools, send them to universities without indebting their family for centuries. You know, buy an affordable car to come to and from work, get health care, provide for their retirement. All of those things were in place.
So Mickey Mouse with the deep voice, he was a happy man.
He was fine.
Yes.
So the question is, like, what happened? Mm. What happened between then and now? Because it's not just the company that did that. You know, healthcare became a ridiculous thing. What happened there with healthcare? Why don't we have a government healthcare program? You know, when did it become impossible to have any kind of retirement benefit? Mm. When did that get stripped from them? So the idea of what a corporation does and what it owes to the people who create the value that are the profits that they hand out to the owners through dividends and buybacks and things like that, it's like the essential agreement had shifted in a fundamental way. And that's what the film interrogates, is the question of, like, what shifted?
Yeah. And I suppose it's more obvious with Disney, because the lives of the people who work there, in some cases, is the antithesis of the dream.
That's exactly what's so painful about it. Yes. It really, and it hurts. I'm telling you, it hurts to tell you that there was a woman who played Winnie the Pooh for years and years and years, 8, 9, 10 years, 6, 7 days a week, who died sleeping in her car. This is just not, you know, at a certain point you can say, oh, it's just business, it's not personal, don't be emotional about it. But of course, it's extremely personal. It's extremely emotional.
Of course,
and it
is.
Would be wrong not to feel that way, because actually the words they never use in the business culture is what is right and what is wrong.
So you're fighting for a livable wage for everybody who works in Disney.
Yeah.
And the documentary is part of this fight.
Yes.
You're in a bind, though, aren't you, Abigail?
No,
in a serious way, because you have stock and you make money from Disney.
I do. Yeah. I do. And that's why at one point I really fought with everybody about making sure that the word complicit was in there. Because, you know, I don't want to point fingers, and I will only speak for my own self. Mm. But I know that every time I accept a dividend from that company, every time I sell shares at a profit, I am reaping the rewards of the work that is done by people who are not able to get by. And it's a violation of the basic social contract, I think. And so as a person who is complicit every day, I need to figure out then how to use the resources I have to change the fundamental circumstances.
Yeah, it's a difficult reconciliation, isn't it?
It is. It is. I could chop up my money and hand it out to everybody who needs it, and they would all have more money for a while. Yeah. But at some point, they'd find themselves back where they were at the job that didn't pay them enough if I don't change the underlying circumstances. Mm. And so I get a lot of, well, why don't you? You're so uncomfortable. Just give it all away. Yes, and, and, you know, honestly, of course, that's what I'm doing. Mm.
Yeah, but
you can't do it all in one day. And
no,
you have
can't,
to do it
can't.
Thoughtfully but, in a way that changes things.
But you're living that life because it is complicit, as you say, but not in my name. You know, in the same, I'm trying to keep those two conflicting things alive in your head. It must be difficult.
Yeah. So I'm throwing myself, you know, kamikaze style at the problem.
Yeah.
Basically,
so how have they reacted to this? Because it's quite damning, the documentary.
How have they reacted?
As in Disney, how Disney reacted?
They're not delighted. They have not said anything public. And they have been very careful not to be seen to be interfering. And I don't know that they are for sure, but I do know that sometimes when I go to certain platforms, the algorithm does not come up with the name of my film. So it's not all been smooth sailing in terms of getting it distributed onto the platforms.
So you think somebody is doing something?
I don't know. I can't say. I can't say. And I certainly wouldn't make any wild claims like that, but it's weird to me. So I think in getting the film out, I've been up against, let's just call it, a little more gravity than most films are up against.
Yeah, I'm just looking at you have stats in the, loads of stats in the documentary, and it is more about capitalism and how it's run riot and it's making society and people sick.
Yeah.
But the statistics about Disney and, say, Bob Iger, who was the last CEO, he was on 65 million.
Yeah.
And that was how many times the median wage?
It was 1,224 times the median worker's wage, 2,000 times the wage that Ralph and Trina were making.
Wow. Yeah. And he has since become a billionaire. Bob Chapek is the current CEO.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering, because I know some of your other documentaries were about women's issues, and I was just looking up, I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but what percentage of CEOs of the Fortune 500 companies are women as of last year?
You know, it's slowly growing, but when I last checked, there were more CEOs named John than there were women CEOs.
Well, I looked up there, 4.1%.
There you go.
Of the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are women.
That's right. And that's a complicated question.
I know it is. But I'm wondering, are men better at greed?
what the science shows about the difference between men and women, they have a higher tolerance for risk.
Yes.
They have a higher tolerance for aggression and aggressive environments, and they tend to thrive better in aggressive environments. So that's how you succeed in the kind of fundamentalist capitalist society that we're currently living in the United States. You know, Disney has a special relationship to capitalism, and it tracks with 20th and 21st century American business history perfectly. There's no company that's a better reflection of the evolution of American business culture. So I knew I had to do this film to get this Mickey off my back, sorry. But I also knew that I had the opportunity to talk about the perfect company to talk about the whole thing. Because, in fact, the problem is with the whole system. And Disney's only doing what every other company in America does.
And you feel that if you can provide an impetus for change within Disney, that maybe that might have a knock-on effect.
It's such a... what's the word? It's iconic.
Yeah.
And the things that they do make a colossal difference.
Yes.
When they stood up against the Don't Say Gay bill, well, that was enormous.
What was that?
In Florida, we have a governor, Ron DeSantis, who
they're talking about him being the next president, Republican president. Yeah.
And so he's sort of performing for the American public what it might look like for him to run for president. And one of the things he did was he had the legislature pass a bill making it illegal to say the word gay in a school under a certain age for, you know, fourth grade and under or something like that. So it's called the Don't Say Gay Bill. You know, yeah, exactly. Big, deep cleansing breaths. That's what I've had to do for 6 years now, and hopefully I'll keep doing them. But, you know, there was a back and forth. You have to read the back and forth. But ultimately, Disney took the right position, which was we support our staff and we support the people who work for us, and we won't support a bill like this. But it was good that they took the stand that they did. And it was a big national moment because I think a lot of other companies will do as Disney does. And so, you know, it's the burden of being the iconic company that you carry a heavier load than other companies do, because other companies aren't going to get threatened the way Disney gets threatened by politicians. And the right wing has started really hitting Disney hard, in fact, on the culture war issues around especially LGBTQ issues. So they carry a heavy load, and they have to do the right thing.
They do.
And when they do, other companies follow them.
Well, that's a positive, isn't it, though, that they
absolutely
have it within their gift to implement change.
And so in other words, if they do the right thing around pay equity or the environment or a thousand other things, other companies will follow them. And it involves them making some fundamental shifts in the way they understand who the revenues belong to, rightly, and how much of a profit is too much of a profit.
I'm just looking at a couple of quotes there. This would have been Walt Disney, decent profit, decently.
Yes.
And I think he also said it takes people to make the dream a reality.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
And that ain't happening at the moment. No. Listen, do you worry, because Jamie, who's working on the show today, he's off to one of the Disney places next week. I know now, after watching the documentary, that I would have to think long and hard about spending money on Disney in the future.
Yeah. Well, that's a very deliberate strategy on my part. I want to make it difficult for them not to change. And they have really played fast and loose with the brand that they have. They could lose it, and they would lose everything if they lose that brand. But if they were to make a big, smart, decent gesture in the direction of sharing the wealth with the employees, then I think people would feel very differently about going there. So tell Jamie to go, to enjoy themselves, and to just say to all the people that they work there how much they appreciate them.
Yeah. And the man in the suit gave everybody who worked in the park a living wage.
Yeah.
And they all lived happily ever after.
Exactly.
That's, Abigail, good luck at the Cork Film Festival. I'm glad to hear that Ralph and Trina are with you.
Yeah.
They deserve a break. And lovely talking to you. And I'm sure we'll talk again.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thanks, Abigail.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
In fairness, it'd be very difficult to boycott Disney. You know, because it's all over the place, isn't it? You wouldn't be able to listen to this anymore, if you know.
We don't talk about Bruno.
Yeah, the movies, the songs, the parks, everything else. But if you see that documentary, you will question the way they operate at the moment. And indeed, the way the whole American economy works. Couldn't agree more with Abigail Disney, says Andrea O'Reilly. We were in Vancouver in September, stayed in West Hastings. Beautiful skyscrapers, flying boats in the harbour, beautiful views. And along the street in East Hastings, people were living in tents. And Jer wants to know, does Abigail know that Walt Disney's ancestors were from Carlow? I'm sure she does. We didn't get a chance to talk about it. Walt visited here in the 1950s and viewed the burial place and saw documents signed by George Disney relating to property they owned in Carlow. Clonmelch Graveyard in Carlow is where his ancestors were buried. Thank you for that. And on the World Cup, I agree with Declan, respect other cultures and beliefs. We are not role models for the world, says Claire, but basic human rights, Claire. Dear Ray, listen to Dear Harry Kane by the BBC before you make your mind up about the World Cup. Does not watching make a difference? It's the same question as does voting make a difference? Hugh and Dundrum, I don't know if it is. And on Alexa, people are suggesting voices that should be used by Amazon to represent, you know, the quintessential Irish voice. So Alexa's voice would have to be Michael Harding for me.
They say that love is another kind of knowing. And we do it all the time when we're loving people. Mm. Our hearts open to children and to parents and to lovers.
Yeah. He'd put you to sleep, wouldn't he? You know. tell me a story, Alexa. And then he'd just tell you a story. He'd be lovely. In that lovely Cavan lilt. And somebody else says, Mihála Murahurtig.
Now, in fairness to him, he considered what I said. He lifted up his glass and it was half full. And he looked at it from the right and from the left and looked at it from underneath. And then he came back to me and he said, would you believe me, Hall? I have an entirely different opinion.
The way technology is going, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're not far away from a point. Remember where you used to be able to customise your well, you still can customise the ringtone on your phone. You'll be able to do that with Alexa. You'll be able to put in, I want Mihála Murahurtig, or I want Michael Harding, or Imelda May, or Saoirse Ronan, or Joanne McNally. That's the way it's going to happen. Anyway, we've another commercial break to take before Noakt. We better get it out of the way.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Grandma, good Marion. Thank you very much. 51551ray@rte.ie. I'm Irish and my last name is Disney. Wow. When I give my name at a meeting, in a shop or in a restaurant, everyone smiles. I hope that continues after people see the documentary. Yeah, unusual in Ireland, Disney. You're the only Disneys in Ireland. I met a guy last weekend at those awards. Marley was his surname. He was one of the recipients, Josh Marley, from up in Donegal. And I was saying, you don't meet many Marleys. And he says, there's loads of Marleys in Donegal. So there you go. I don't think there's any many Disneys anywhere in Ireland. Now, our quiz. Hit the button. Yes. We have two quizzers standing by. We have a prize. It's a two-night stay for two people in the wonderful Wineport Lodge. It's on the banks of Loch Ree. And you will have a private balcony to look out onto the lake. Delicious leisurely breakfast each morning and dinner on the evening of your choice, and loads of things to do, walks and cycles, and there's yoga classes, and there's the Cedarwood Spa and an infinity pool. Wineport.ie for more information. And it's just over an hour from Dublin and less than that from Galway. Hello, Noreen.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Good. Noreen Granger is in County Kildare. Where exactly in Kildare are you?
I'm currently just on the school pickup, and I've picked up two of my kids, and I'm in Selbridge.
Aha! So it's North Kildare, and you're doing taxi as you do most days, I would imagine.
Absolutely, yeah. Mum's favourite job.
Yes, yeah. And who are you taxiing today?
Anna and Richard.
Right, and Anna, I see, is in first year. How's that going for her?
Yeah, she's just doing her November assessments currently, and. All going well.
Great. And then Dara? Richard.
Yeah, Richard is in second year. He's 14. So he's next week. So at least we get a week in between the two lots.
So these are like Christmas exams of sorts, are they?
Yes. They come early now. These are the Christmas exams, but they're called the November assessments.
And they're called the November assessments. Okay. And you're a mental health nurse part-time.
Yes, that's right.
Can I ask you, do you work within a community mental health team? Is that
the way I do, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I work in North Kildare in community mental health.
Right. And just not to get too serious, but is it well resourced in your area, do you think?
Yeah, it is. It's one of the better areas. Yeah. We have home care teams and we have day hospitals, day centres.
Yes,
it's quite well resourced compared to other areas.
Yes, because it is a bit of a geographical lottery, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And the vision for change, that's what they stipulated, what you're doing, that those teams and then day hospitals and going out into the community so that people could live at home and still get the care they needed.
Exactly. The services are there and it just prevents them going into the acute hospital and they can, you know, continue to live at home and avail of our services. So it works quite well.
Yeah, and hospitals can be very stressful places. So to be at home with the people that you love and the things that you know obviously helps your mental health.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You celebrated a big birthday last week.
Yes, I'm not saying which one, but it was.
I'm doing the maths. I know what it is.
Significant.
How did that go for you?
Yeah, it went really well. We went on a family break down to Killarney there during midterm.
Lovely.
And then I went away with a couple of friends down to Wexford the weekend gone by. So truly spoiled at the moment.
Great. Well, belated birthday wishes. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you very much.
NASA Cook from Galway City. How are you doing, NASA?
Good, Ray. Thank you.
Good. Now, you're on the road to recovery, I believe.
I'm on the road to recovery, yeah. I've been off sick with a tummy bug for the last couple of days.
Ooh.
And I'm just beginning to feel human.
Yeah. Oh, there's nothing worse. Well, there is worse, but like it's just when you're in the middle of that and you can't see the end of it, so to speak.
Yeah.
So it was every which way, was it? Or
No, up.
Up. Sorry, I shouldn't have asked that question, so yeah. You can blame me for anything that comes next. Okay, so you're back to work tomorrow?
I'm back to work tomorrow, yeah.
Great. And you're back eating, are you?
I am back eating, yes, I am indeed.
Right, and what did you find at the back of the freezer?
I found a spaghetti bolognese in the back of the freezer that past me had stashed away for future me at an evening like this.
I love that. Past me, it's stashed away for future me. And future me is saying, thank you very much, I'm very hungry.
Exactly.
Yes. So you've two children, the same as Noreen. What ages are yours?
Right. 6 and 4.
Ah, right. So they're big Santa fans, I'd say.
Big Santa fans. High excitement.
Yes. And they're sort of energising each other.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Smith's catalogue gets perused on a regular basis here.
Yeah, yeah. And then before you know it now, there'll be a little elf on the shelf. You'll have to sort that out. That's
exactly.
They arrive the 1st of December, do they? Or I can never figure it out.
We haven't had one yet.
So have you not? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe
keep
Santa,
it away as long as possible.
Santa might let us know. And if it's a little later, I don't mind. You know what I mean? If the elf on the shelf doesn't arrive till the 24th or that,
that's okay by me.
That's okay by me too. That's okay. I'm sure it'll be okay by a lot of parents. But we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens there. Okay, so it's NASA against Noreen. Three questions each. If you go for a long clip, you get a point. Noreen and NASA, if you go for a shorter clip, it's more difficult to get 2 points. And whoever gets the most points is the winner. And if it's drawn points, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck to you both. Here we go. Now, Noreen, back to you. Excuse me. The year is 2008 and we're starting on the television. Would you like a long clip or a short clip?
Short clip, please.
Short clip, okay. The first season of this American television series came out in 2008. The series followed a high school chemistry teacher who turned to a life of drug making and crime. And here is your short clip.
My name is Skylar White, yo. My husband is Walter White, yo. Uh-huh. He told me everything.
Well.
No. Sorry.
No.
No idea.
Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
You've probably heard about it but not seen
it.
Yeah, Bryan Cranston
was
the lead in that. And yeah, no points there. Okay. To you, NASA, a chance to go in front television from 2008.
Okay.
What do you want, a long clip or a short clip?
Short, please.
Short, okay. In 2008, this British coming-of-age comedy series came out. The show followed the misadventures of four suburban teenagers, Will, Simon, Neil and Jay. Can you name it?
Yes, Brav.
3 pints of lager and a pint of Guinness.
Any ID?
Yeah.
You know this is an Australian driving licence?
Yep.
So you're Australian?
That's right, mate.
Well.
The in-betweeners.
Yes, yeah. Brilliantly funny. And you get 2 points for that. Noreen, that puts you under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
We're on to music now from 2008. Do you want to go long or short?
Go short.
Short. This song hit the top of the Irish charts in 2008. Can you name the song or the singer? Short clip. Here we go.
I'm a snake in dreams since I was 17. Don't matter if I step on the scene.
Miley Cyrus.
No. See, it could have been so many people, couldn't it?
Yeah.
Britney Spears. Britney Spears.
Perfect. Yeah.
Piece of Me is the name of the song. Now, NASA, what that means for you is if you get anything from this, Noreen can't catch you.
Oh, good. Sorry, Noreen. I just want to have to rely on these things to try and break your question.
Oh, good, she says. Right. There's a lovely honesty about that. Okay, so do you want to go long or short?
I'll go short, please.
You don't have to, but you're going short. Okay, this is another song that hit the top of the Irish charts in 2008. Can you name the song or the singer?
It felt so right, don't mean I'm in love tonight.
It's Katy Perry.
Yeah.
It is. You knew that, Noreen, did you? Yeah.
Yeah, congratulations,
I kissed a girl, yes.
Noreen,
sorry about that.
No problem.
Yeah, and that's one of Britney's lesser known songs, but it was a hit and it did top the charts in 2008. We're going to send you out. We're on the brand new Ray Darcy Show, Keep Cups.
Woohoo!
Yes, you can have it there beside you.
One of the only ones with it.
Yes, and you can have it beside you in the car as you taxi Anna and Richard around.
Okay.
Well done, Noreen. Lovely talking to you. Bye
Thanks
now. See
much.
You. Bye, bye, bye.
Okay. NASA, bye, Noreen.
NASA, well done.
Thanks very much.
You can now go to wineport.ie and see what deliciousness is in store for you.
Lovely.
And it's less than an hour from where you're living there. So,
which is all the better.
Yeah, but it's it feels like you're away because I don't know if you've been there before, but it's in the middle of nowhere and by the lake and it's wonderful and it's wineport.ie. So enjoy that.
Thanks. Lovely, thank you very much.
Okay, see you, NASA. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
It's apparently the must-see new show on the West End. It's inspired by the trial that gripped the UK and beyond. Wagatha Christie opened in the West End on Tuesday night, and our next guest, columnist and presenter Lizzie Cundy, was in the front row. Hello, Lizzie.
Hello. Lovely to be with you.
Lovely to talk to you. And you were in that world for a long time, Lizzie.
Oh, well, I still am in that world. Yeah, the football world, I mean, it's a long time now, like nearly 30 years, can you believe? And it's amazing because I'm only 21. But yeah, but it's been I've known the world, and I've seen footballers come and go, and I'm still friends with them today.
Right. So you were married to a footballer at one stage?
Yes, I was for 18 years. Yes. He played for Chelsea, Tottenham, Jason, and we're very lucky. I have two lovely boys from the marriage, but broke up soon after the World Cup in 2010. It is now going back.
And is that where you met Colleen Rooney first?
No, I originally met Colleen back in the day of the first World Cup that I was covering for, actually, for ITV in Baden-Baden in Germany.
Right.
And she was a young girl, fresh, no one really knew much about her, was childhood sweetheart to Wayne Rooney.
Yeah.
And suddenly became the talk of every newspaper, and they named them the Wags, and it went on from there. We didn't, we didn't call ourselves that.
Yes.
The papers named it the Wags, and they got more attention than the footballers.
Yeah, the wives and girlfriends, Wags. And Colleen became the queen of the Wags.
Well, she did indeed. I mean, at the time when we were in Germany, don't forget they had Victoria Beckham, there was Cheryl Cole, who was seeing Ashley Cole at the time, and there was kind of like a hierarchy, and I have to say Victoria was at the top, and Colleen was pretty much new on the scene, young girl, had been seeing Wayne Rooney from the age of 16, childhood sweethearts. But this was the first time the press really got to know her. And they went wild about her. It was like the Beatles had come to town. I've never seen anything like it in my life. Probably will never again. But the press people couldn't get enough of them.
Yeah, so no surprise then that when this eventually went to court this summer, that the eyes of the world were on it. And it delivered, didn't it?
Well, it did. And for me, I just think it's so sad. I don't think it should have happened.
No.
It happened before the pandemic, cost millions. And don't forget, it was Rebecca Vardy that took Colleen to court. Colleen, who I'm friends with, tried many times to stop this happening.
Yes.
And I don't think people realise that. But it was Rebecca Vardy that wanted this to go ahead. And it's very hard when you're on the back foot trying to stop it. And you've got the other side wanting it to go to court.
Yeah.
And it was incredible. And you have two, former friends, footballers' wives, head-to-head, and it was really Wags at war. It was unbelievable, but it captured not just this nation, but from Australia,
Ireland,
USA,
we were glued to it
everywhere.
Here. We were glued to it here. And yes. Just for somebody who's been living under a rock, the reason it got the name Wagatha Christie was that your friend Colleen brilliantly set up a sting for Rebecca Vardy. She suspected that she was leaking information from a private WhatsApp group, and she sent information to her that only she had, and it appeared in one of the papers. And then she came out when she had all her evidence in a row and accused her of it. And then Rebecca said, "You can't do that," and she brought her to court. And that's the thing. But
that's it.
That's it. There's the sort of the 30-second version of it. But it's on stage. It's on stage now. And the brilliant thing is, you know that thing, Lizzie, that they say fact is stranger than fiction. So this wasn't created out of somebody's head. These are actually the scripts from the courtroom.
I mean, this is actual transcript from
the
court. So I was sitting there. I mean, I'll be honest. I was sitting in the front row. It's like seeing a who's done it when you know who's done it. Before the curtain goes up, you know who's done it.
Yeah.
And I thought, how are they going to cram a 7-day trial into 2 hours? But let me tell you, they do it unbelievably well. The acting is brilliant. But the lines that came from the court, I couldn't believe the transcript. And I just thought, how did ever... you know, Rebecca Vardy think she'd win this case when there was no evidence. It, you know, the phone went overboard into the North Deep Sea.
No, it didn't. It went into Davy Jones's locker.
Davy Jones's locker. That gave the biggest roar in the audience.
Who's Davy Jones?
Exactly. And it wasn't a comedy night, but it ended up being one. And there's poor Peter Andre that was brought into this.
Oh, they're not bringing his little thing into it. Oh, no, not again.
About his poor manhood. I'm a Chipolata. Get me out of here. I had huge roars from the crowd. But the fact was, you know, your heart went out to Colleen because her life had been, you know, being put to all the press.
And have you been talking to her since? And how does she feel? I'm sure she's glad it's over.
Well, Colleen's very happy it's over. Obviously, the truth came to the top, and she won this case. But don't forget, it's been very stressful. Anyone who knows court, it's the worst place to be. You know, even Wayne Rooney took the stand, which is shown in this play, where he said, you know, he had to pull Jamie Vardy, Rebecca's husband, and say, calm your wife down with all the setup, with the paparazzi and everything. And it was a real insight into what went on. I mean, it is a scene from Dynasty. I'd say you couldn't make it up.
You couldn't make it up.
But really worth seeing this show, because you actually do feel you're in the courtroom with them. It's very gripping. Yes. As I said, funny, very funny at times, but this is the real transcript. And I have to say, out of all the shows I've been in the West End, I'd give this one of the top rating marks. It was fantastic.
You think it's going to run and run, because like the other name that was given to the trial was The Scouse Trap. And of course, that's because of Agatha Christie, The Mouse Trap. And that ran from 1952 to 2020, which is 68 years. Do you think this could run for 68 years, Lizzie?
Imagine that. I'll be going up the red carpet in a Zimmer frame with that.
Did you recognise any of the main players in the audience? Was there anybody there?
Well, I have to say, I got there just in time for the curtain to be raised, but next to me were Colleen's actual legal team and barristers that were played on stage. And I have to say, I think they are far happier with how that play is portrayed than Rebecca Vardy's
representation.
And don't forget, seeing the barristers, they're two very different barristers. Colleen's barrister was very flamboyant, colourful, good-looking, whereas Rebecca's Vardy's barrister was very plain, you know, very, very humble, you know, and ordinary. And then you see two very different barristers, but two different footballers' wives.
Do you think they could make a musical out of it? Do you think they could make a musical out of it?
I think there's a musical. Don't forget, I did Wag the Musical. I don't know if you remember this guy. He got 4 out of 5 in the Gay Times, so I was very happy with that. But this could be something more. And I hear there's books, there's even movies.
Yes.
And Hollywood's calling. So I don't think we're going to hear the last of it, let me tell you.
Okay, Lizzie Cundy, columnist, presenter, former Wag. Thanks so much for joining us today. Thanks, Lizzie. Thank you. Have a listen to this.
Pulling me up whenever I'm down.
Ruth Ann Cunningham.
Hello.
Hello. That is Diana Ross. On the phone we have Ruth Ann Cunningham, but there was a time not so long ago where Ruth Ann Cunningham sang that song for Diana Ross. Isn't that true?
I did.
Yes.
Congratulations,
because you're one of the co-writers on that song.
Yeah.
And that song's on the album Thank You, which is Diana Ross's current album, which has been nominated for a Grammy.
Yay!
You've been here before.
Very exciting.
You've been here before, haven't you? You've been nominated for a Grammy before.
Yeah, I was nominated with John Legend in 2020 in the same category, actually, Best Traditional Pop Album.
Yeah.
And now here I am a few years later nominated with Diana Ross. It's just crazy stuff. It's madness, Ray. I don't know what's happening.
How did it happen, Ruth Ann?
So I worked at a, I wrote in LA at a Diana Ross writing camp in January 2020, just before lockdown, actually. And it was a special writing camp for her by all, an all-female writing group called We Are She Writes. And I was invited to that, and she popped in to say hi and wish us luck and to say what type of music she wanted and where she was at in her life and her career, and what, and she wanted to make this album for the fans and to thank them. And so we went in that day and wrote I Still Believe, which you just heard, and I sang the demo, and then she heard it and she loved it and recorded it and kept us on the BVs. And yeah,
so you were on that we just heard.
Yes, yeah, yeah. All of us were on it, yeah.
so come, bring us back to this writing camp. So there's a group of, it's a collective of women called, yeah, what?
We Are She Writes is the name of the, oh, yes, of the collective, and they're all about empowering women in the industry. And so they have these camps around the world that they do with all female writers and producers, right, to give females like more opportunities. And they, Diana actually partnered with this company to do this camp of, right, all females. So it was really, really amazing of her to do that. And then she took the songs she felt were strongest for her album, including ours.
We've spoken before about the songwriting thing. Is it yeah, going more and more back to the old days where there were, you know, where there were guns for hire? So you did what you do, you write songs, and then you sort of send them to various people and they decide they're going to record them or not.
Yeah, it's all different. Like I've, you know, for Niall Horan, say, yes, I've written with him for both his albums, or for, you know, it's different. It depends on how the person is making the album. I think with Diana, she really wanted just the best songs, and she wrote some of them, and then she also took some, and this camp was for her. So she gave us directions of what she wanted, what sound she liked. She just wanted to be classic Diana Ross. So it was a really fun thing to write for, because it's not every, yeah, day you get to write for a legend. Like that.
A legend, like a legend doesn't do it.
Yeah.
A legend isn't a big enough word, Ruth Ann.
She's iconic.
Like back in the first days of Motown, she was there.
I know. And so when she's
Supremes,
kind of,
you know,
like, yeah, and then she's, you know, standing in front of you saying, you know, write me a great song. And that's what we did. And hopefully that's what we did. And then she released it. It was the last single off the album. And now it's, yeah, Grammy nominated. So it's just pinch me moment type,
yes,
of stuff.
Yes, it is. Because she's like she had a session with, what's his name? Nile Rodgers, of course. All remember that in the 80s?
Yeah.
Upside Down and all that. Wasn't that with Nile Rodgers? It was.
She's, yeah, working, yeah,
yeah, yeah. Amazing. So what else is happening in your world? I know you have a 1-year-old there who you're minding. Well, it's minding because it's yours. But because we were hoping to get you
being
in studio.
A mom too.
Yeah, being a mom too.
I know,
too,
I'm
yeah,
so sorry. Yes, I
know,
have,
no,
I have
don't
an
worry
almost
about
1-year-old who needed me today. But
I'm just wondering, does having a 1-year-old, does that change how you approach writing songs? Does it give you inspiration or what?
Definitely, it's opened up a whole new perspective on life. I don't think anyone can prepare you for becoming a parent and becoming a mother, and I've just been loving it. And also it's like a roller coaster ride of emotions, and it's definitely given me a whole new perspective on life and everything, and everything I do now is for her. And,
yeah,
and actually she was born on Toy Show Night last year, and I'm now writing the music for, or have written the music for, the Toy Show musical. So that's what's going on right now, is I've actually been in rehearsals for that this week with the cast and the crew, and everyone's doing an amazing job. And you know, the musical is now, you know, going on stage,
yes,
in a few, you know, in a few.
How's it going? How are the rehearsals going?
They're going great. Everybody's doing a great job. The kids are absolutely, I mean, it's all about the kids, right? You know, and
yeah,
it's like they're doing such a fantastic job. The songs are just really coming to life, and it's amazing to just be a part of it and to have some of the, you know, the Toy Show kids stars that have been on the,
yes,
Toy Show,
yeah,
be a part of the musical, you know. So it's just, it's really magical, and I'm just really, really
night?
Excited.
When's opening night?
Opening night is the 14th of December. There's tickets on RT.ie. I tell you, if you've got kids, come to see this show, because honestly it's magical.
And the other date in your diary is Monday the 6th of February, which is the Grammys, and
yes,
you will be there, nominated for Best Traditional Pop Vocal Album, a song you co-wrote for Diana Ross. Ruth Ann Cunningham, great to talk to you. Next time it'll be
thank
in person, you might sing for us as well. See you,
yeah,
Ruth Ann.
I
mind
will
yourself. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye. Now that's it from us. Cormac and Sarah on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.